nice.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of safer that way, don't you think? Yeah. We'll all stay friends a lot longer this
yes,
way.
We will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A little inside joke.
We might leave it that way the whole show. We haven't decided yet.
We haven't really
decided. Obi and Anthony got a 30-day suspension. We'll see how. All right. Where the fuck are we? All right, here we go. This is show number 54, I think.
Wow.
Can you believe it? How the hell did we do that? All right, we're good to go. Bum, 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 bum. In 3, 2, 1.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic. It is our 54th episode, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 16th of May, 2007.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Three buddies die in a car crash and they all go to heaven. When they get there, they find themselves in an orientation where they're asked, when you're in your casket and your friends and family are mourning over you, what would you like to hear them say about you? The first guy thinks for a moment and says, I'd like to hear people say that I was a brilliant doctor, I helped a lot of people, and that I was a great family man. The second guy thinks for a moment and says, I'd like to hear them say that I was a wonderful husband and a school teacher, and I made a huge difference in the lives of school children of tomorrow. Finally, they get to the last guy, and he says, hell, I'd like to hear them say, holy shit, he's still moving!
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of East to my friends, Son of East and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic. It is our 54th episode, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 16th of May, 2007. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you here again for, week after week I say it's going to be a great show, and week after week I'm just lying out my ass, but not this week, my friends. This week we're going to have a really outstanding show. I'm very, very excited. You know, we've had a lot of guests on in the last, over a year, and we've had people in entertainment, and we've had people in science, and we've had, people in all kinds of industries. Today we've got on an incredible writer, Margalit Fox, who is currently an obituary writer for the New York Times. You've heard her work over the last couple of weeks. Ruben Kaslow and the other fish mogul. And Margalit has written a book that will be coming out this summer for Simon & Schuster on the meaning of language. And we're going to have her as our guest in the second hour. In the first hour, we'll be spending our regular time with our good friends Sherry and Parviz, and Sherry's sister is sitting in the studio with us today, Robin, and we'll be getting together with Jason Nathanson and a bunch of other sundry sordid nonsense. But before we get any further, let's punch down these buttons here and say Son of Easter to all the one and all the all. You know him, you love him. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. We all missed him. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. For Mr. Parviz Fadale.
I've been standing in the corner for 2 weeks.
Why?
I've been a bad boy.
I love you.
I've been a bad boy, so I've been standing in the corner for 2 weeks, and I thought about what I did wrong.
Nothing.
And?
Couldn't come up with anything.
The thought came and went pretty quick.
Couldn't come up with anything, could you?
Couldn't come up with anything. Son of Easter, Robin.
Son of Vista, you're looking good.
Oh, thank you.
You were a little hot and sweaty today. Now, did you come straight from work or?
No. I showered, got cleaned up for you.
All right.
And just the car is hot. I didn't have the AC on.
Okay.
Yeah, I have cloth seats, chairs. Seats are there or chairs?
I know that joke. Well, I don't know what you're driving around in, Jed. I know when Granny's in the back of the truck, she's in a rocker, but I don't know what you...
I have chairs in there.
You have chairs?
Yes.
A couple of lawn chairs.
A couple of lawn
yeah.
chairs.
It's the Dukes of Fallujah.
And enough about me.
You're wearing your Ali Dukes. You know what that means. And let's say Son of Easter to the birthday girl, Sherry Stevens.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
Happy birthday to you.
You're on, baby.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on. Can't hear?
I can hear me now.
Okay.
Good. I can hear me now. Thank you. Well,
put your fingers in your ears, then you can have it.
Yeah.
So this is your birthday.
It is.
And you're here in the show with us.
I know it's sad. I don't have much else to do.
Did you get your free Denny's meal?
No.
Not yet.
Well, you still have time.
Still till midnight.
I got till midnight. So.
Unless you're black. And it's already too late. No, I'm just saying.
No. I know what you're saying. If you're black, it's always midnight. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Oh.
Not even close.
No,
they've been sued multiple times for...
I'm sorry. Oh, color me red. Ooh.
Hey. And
just don't color me black. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll edit all this.
I should have done this last week. All right. Let's say hello to our regulars here. Mr. Kivadada. Michael Swirling.
Stroke or unload.
Harry Whittington. No, that's Dick Cheney. This is Harry. Whitney. Daniel. No, Kenneth.
Oh,
everyone's in the witness protection program this week. And I forget who this is.
English,
oh, yeah. I remember him. Allie Waller. Jerry Seinfeld.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
Our mystery guest.
When is a good fairy going to take off my penis?
And, of course, our good friend.
I'm Brian Cox.
There you go.
Did you do Michael Swirling?
Yeah.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Well, did you just arrive? Is that the deal?
No,
I
missed it. I always say asshole.
Thank you.
He's not listening, is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you think I don't know your sister's here? I know your sister's here. We were talking to her before you came in.
Oh, good. Just checking.
I know Robin is here.
There's a stranger here.
We needed to get through the break. I wanted to give her I didn't want to rush her introduction into the last 12 seconds.
She deserves a big introduction.
She does. So Sean can't be with us today. I got a call last night from Michelle, Sean's wife, and I actually saw Sean over the weekend. And he was fine. He's still got that torn muscle in his shoulder or whatever from the time. But it's still not great. And I guess it's sort of taken a little bit out of him. And I think in addition to that, he's developed laryngitis. Mm. So Michelle called, which is rare because usually he calls himself to blow us off. But this time he had his wife do it. And I thought I turned your mic off. How
you
come
did.
We can still hear you?
I don't know.
How does that work?
I don't know.
Are you jacking to the board through your own... how the hell did
through
that...
Through my own jack? No.
Okay. Don't you know about Denny's being sued because black patrons claimed that there was all kinds of racial things and they were not serving them?
But I want you to mark my words. I did not bring up the whole black thing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I know, but you...
I just said about birthday dinner.
I know, but you took it off. I know, but then you took it off in this other...
Yeah, I went somewhere else with it. You're right.
You did. You understand that.
Yes, I do. I do. Okay. They got sued, therefore we might get some attention.
Yeah. And and so we had an empty third chair, and Sherry said, my sister would love to sit in, and we said we'd love to have her. So let us say Sona Vista to Robin Hardy.
Thank
Welcome
you.
Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Sona Vista.
Sona Vista.
I think Parvez looks dry and comfortable, actually.
Actually, that was very uncomfortable. It's Parviz. Yeah.
Parviz. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I think he looks dry and uncomfortable.
Dry and uncomfortable.
Arid. You look a little arid. Do you want to explain to her how you say Sona Vista? Because you understand the process.
Well, Sona Vista comes from two words, Sona and Vista. And together we put them and say Sona Vista.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was going for.
What were you going for?
Pizza, swoop, sausage.
Oh, yeah.
Pizza, swoop, sausage. Got it.
Oh, yeah! Son of Easter! Oh. You're supposed to turn your hand around like you're throwing a pizza in the air when you say
I got it.
Go ahead and do it.
Son of Easter!
There you go.
Very good.
Nice.
It took me weeks to get that.
Really?
You're so advanced. You're always... You've always
I'm only here so that I can... Every time you say something, I can say, don't copy me.
So, have you guys worked together before? Because you're a performer. I mean, you've been performing for...
Oh, God,
well,
no.
It's true, right?
She's saying, oh, God, no, in terms of the question, have we ever worked together?
Have you worked together? I see. Okay.
I am the no-talent sister.
That's
She's
not
the talented
true.
Sister.
She's
what have you
talented.
Done?
Oh, well, it's not legal in 26 states.
Whoa.
No, I'm kidding.
But Denny's will serve her.
Boy, do they serve me. I used to be a storyteller and a mother goose.
Yeah,
and,
no kidding.
I used to do folk tales from around the world, and I sing.
Wow.
Multi-talented.
I played the gingerbread man at our local mall.
Awesome. I feel it.
At least that's what he told the cops.
No, really.
Come and chase me.
It's a cookie in my pocket. I had that big bulbous head, so nobody knew it was me. I was at the mall.
Come and sit on my lap for a picture.
I was lonely.
but you've given up sort of the big stage for the smaller stage. You've completed your teaching education at this point?
That's right.
And have you completed your certification as well?
Yes, I have. Sir.
Are you in a classroom?
Now.
That's okay. Confusing to the audience, too. Don't worry about it. Have you completed the certification process? I know you're doing student
classes.
And so, do you have a classroom?
No, I'm substituting.
You're substituting. English, I'm guessing? That's a wild ass guess here.
They won't let me teach until I learn how to say substitute.
What grades?
I like kindergarten. I like the wee ones.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah, those are cool.
So is it, I mean, before you went into it, obviously you've had children and so you had a sense, but once you actually found yourself in the classroom, was it different than you expected?
Well,
because they're not your kids, obviously.
Well, it wasn't different because I had been performing for kids, and so I had a real sense of, you know, where kids were at. And when you're a mother, you kind of take little snapshots each time they go through a grade,
all right.
And of how it is and what it feels like. And so, no, it wasn't at all surprising. In fact, it was unusually comfortable.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. And so now you're substituting at more than one school, or do you just kind of stay in one place for a while? Because with little kids, if change is not a good thing, right? I mean, like stability and sort of constancy.
Oh, well,
and
I'm there when teachers are out for a work day or when they're sick, and I go all over the district, and they put me everywhere.
And are you getting a rep?
Oh, yeah.
Because I... Do you remember... Because I remember having substitute teachers...
Oh, you mean about
that,
teaching. Yeah.
Okay, that too. Because I remember substitute teachers that I loved.
Yes.
Like, you'd actually want your teachers to be out for something because there was, like, Mr. Harrison. And he was, like, the hippie that just came back from Vietnam that had the stories and was cool. And he would teach you, like, Tai Chi and, you know, I mean, he had stuff, right? I mean, you probably remember those teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So are you kind of like that, or do you, like, need to be... Because my mom was a disciplinarian.
Oh, I think it depends on where I'm at in my cycle for the kids.
Oh, jeez. Just call me Aunt Flo.
No,
I don't know if this is my last show.
I kid you. No.
Okay.
No, I meant to say was I think it depends on the grade that I'm teaching.
Yes. We can edit this. We won't, but we can. We just won't. It's much better if we don't. Cool. Well, welcome to the show. We're excited that you're here.
You used my real name, didn't you?
Yeah. Is that a bad thing to do?
That's all right.
I can take it out. That we can take out. You don't want people to know that your name is Robin?
Oh, that's fine.
The last name?
No.
We will not mention your last name.
Don't mention it.
Okay. So we'll make a note to ourselves that there's no last name. I think I only said it once. So that'll be easy enough to block out. We'll put what word would you like to use when we so actually say the word name that you'd like to use as last name and then we'll just actually cut it in at that point.
Steven Zanaya.
Steven Zanaya. Okay.
It's not a last name.
You want to give it a read?
Steven Zanaya.
Perfect. Okay. So now we have it. So we'll be able to do the edit.
Cool.
It's like it never happened. Much like
cool.
The entertainment
Magic.
Value of the show. All right. Here's what we're gonna do. We'll take a quick break. So the order of the show today is we'll take a quick break. All the music today has to do with death because we're talking about
my birthday
obituaries. Yeah. So we're doing obituaries with Margaret Lee Fox. So we have music from the Grateful Dead, from the Dead Kennedys, and we have songs about being dead. So we've got a whole dead theme today. Very entertaining. We come back, we'll pick up with some more nonsense. We'll talk with Jason a little bit later in the show. And then coming up at our 6 o'clock, so the beginning of the second hour, Margalit Fox.
Cool.
Very exciting. There you go. So you're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, Parviz Vitali, and Robin...
Oh, Stevenhauser? Oh. I already forgot. it's on me the whole show?
Steven Sanaya.
Oh, Steven Sanaya.
Write it down.
Got it.
Okay. And we'll be back after this important announcement, so stick around.
Do you know Stevenhauser?
No.
Okay.
Steven, you're thinking of Doogie.
Oh, that's Doogie. Come on.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Trailed by 20 hounds. Didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. Sit out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, baby, lonely 20 bills. Spent the night in Utah in a cave up in the hills. Sit out and run, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. I ran down to the levee, but the devil caught me there. Took my $20 bill and it vanished in the air. I'm running, but take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Got two reasons why I cry awake, lonely night. The first one's named Sweet Anne-Marie, and she's my heart's delight. Second one is prison, baby, the sheriff's on my trail. And if he catches up with me, I'll spend my life in jail. Got a wife in Chino, baby, and one in Cherokee. First one says she got my child, but it don't look like me. Said I'm running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
This new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 18 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. Those are the email addresses. You can also see us over at schnauzerlogic.com/MySpace. We got a phone number for the show. It's area code 206-666-6540. And let's say welcome back to... Sherry Stevens.
Son of Easta.
And let's say welcome back to Parviz Vitali.
Son of Easta.
And let's say welcome back to Robin.
Stevensauer.
Son of Easta.
You just go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, wrong, or indifferent.
Are there any other ways of getting in contact with us that I missed? I feel like I'm missing.
Oh, the phone number.
No, I gave that out,
oh,
actually.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, you must have been in the other room.
The other room in his head.
206-666-6540. We're in the iTunes Music Store.
iTunes Music Store.
People can give us a review.
Correct.
Which would be a nice thing to do.
Uh-huh. MySpace account?
MySpace.com/nowserlogic.
Uh-huh.
I got a little photo gallery at sonavista.smugmug.com.
Cool.
What else?
My home address.
All right, we'll do that later on. But meanwhile, we have to give an actual official birthday greeting to Sherry.
Yes.
So, and my favorite way of doing it was with the Arrogant Worms.
Once a year we celebrate with stupid hats and plastic plates the fact that you were able to make another trip around the sun. And the whole clan gathers round and gifts and laughter do abound. And we let out a joyful sound and sing that stupid song.
Happy birthday!
Now you're 1 year older.
Happy birthday!
Your life still isn't over.
Happy birthday!
You did not accomplish much. But you didn't die this year, I guess that's good enough.
Woo!
These guys are all watching me light candles.
With a blowtorch.
So your fading health.
So this is a bad idea.
Yourself your chance of finding
time
fame
killer.
And wealth decreasing every year. Does it feel like you're doing laps and eating food and taking
this
naps?
This is a horrible
someday,
idea.
Perhaps your life will hold some cheer.
Happy birthday!
I'm glad we didn't go with the 55 candles we were going for.
I know.
You're starting to get fatter.
Happy birthday!
It's downhill from now on.
Right. Feeling like a Hanukkah gone horribly wrong.
We have bath mats all over the wall. Hurry, blow it out.
If cryogenics were all free, then you could live like Walt Disney and live for all eternity.
We have
the
mics. We have
ice.
Don't burn the mic.
Yeah, everything's foam and paper.
Feels like a Great White concert. Anybody recognize that reference?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but we got our fingers on 911 if we need it. So you only got to hold for another 24 seconds.
Stupid cake.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Bill Bramden, Stanley, Skippy, the Bush Kangaroo, Bob,
starts with
when the weather is
traditional,
Malachi,
happy birthday to you.
Not
yay! There goes the smart alarms.
Nice.
We have not that old.
We have more. We have more. Otis Spunkmeyers. That's a terrible name for a muffin, isn't it?
Otis Spunkmeyer.
Yeah.
And what kind did you get?
The chocolate.
Double.
What? Again.
He said double.
You seem to understand him.
Thank
you.
Well,
please. Thank you, Robin.
You come every week. Into Farvey.
Okay. Translate. What did
thank
you mean,
Robin?
By
that? What did I mean by that?
What?
Oh, baby.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
You found a co-host for your show.
I think I did.
Thank you.
So what? This is you're the older sister, the younger sister?
I'm the younger sister.
You're the baby.
Even though Robin's been telling her kids that I've been the older sister all these years. And just last week, her daughter said to me, wait, we were talking about something happening in high school. And she said, wait, my mom always said that you were older. So no, I straightened her out, Robin. So your secret's out.
So is this a big zero or
no?
This is not
yet.
How many years younger are you than your sister?
Three
years younger.
Oh, okay.
And don't look at me like that.
Any
She's
other
like
two and a half?
Okay.
Any brothers, sisters? Up or down or
in between? Not really.
Down. Not really.
What does not really mean?
The body was never recovered. What does that mean?
He's kind of been missing for a while.
Is that funny?
I feel like I need to call in CSI.
We do have a half brother.
Okay. Go on, Parvis. Ask the obvious question.
Which half is it?
Thank you.
Is that the obvious question?
Yeah, top or bottom?
Top or bottom? Left or right?
Very funny.
My father was married before he married my mother and had a son.
I see.
And I know he's like 12 or 13 years older than I am.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. he lives in Salt Lake.
We think,
yeah.
So you don't see him very often?
No.
Okay.
What makes you think that?
Is he, we don't
know where he is or if he's alive?
No, actually my best family relationships are with people that I don't know where they are and I'm not sure if they're alive.
You can just make up your own story how they're doing.
We get along very well. Very, very well. People in the studio, So are you excited to be turning a year older?
No.
No?
No.
You're not celebrating your life and all you've accomplished to this point?
I've accomplished things to
of
this
course.
Point.
Of no, course.
Have.
You have beautiful children.
I have beautiful children.
Wonderful family and friends. You've been responsible for making millions and millions of people's lives easier with the products that you've helped to ship, companies that you've worked for.
Thank you.
That fix everyone that you've touched. And I mean that in a sexual way. I don't know what that means. Yeah.
No, I in that regard, I have to say I'm very blessed and feel very rich with good friends. The phone's been ringing since 8 o'clock this morning, and I had a busy back-to-back day, but it's been a good one because I've gotten birthday greetings via email, via phone. People have been calling me from as far away as Colorado and Oklahoma.
Aren't birthdays truly just remarkable? I mean, the fact that there's one day out of the year where you actually, I think you wake up that morning feeling good. I mean, I think, where you think, God, somebody's bound to call me today. Somebody's bound to get a hold of me to wish me a happy birthday. And inevitably it happens. And the whole day lasts that long. And then you do your little tally, how many people called, how many people emailed. And then at the end of the night, you go to bed. And you wake up the next day and you...
And you're older.
Yeah, you're older and nothing. But that one day of the year, you're almost proud to tell people, oh, by the way, it's my birthday, or I'm at Starbucks. It's my birthday. I'm at Denny's. It's my birthday.
I have been telling everybody it's my birthday.
Yeah.
I started a project meeting this morning saying, you know, hi, I hope everybody's doing well. And they're all looking at me and I'm like, well, it's my birthday.
Yeah,
and on
it's
cue,
a big deal.
You know, 20 people in a room said, happy birthday. And so I've gotten away with a lot of things today, which has been kind of nice.
I think we look for reasons to celebrate each other.
Yeah.
And we don't always have those reasons. And so, but I think we like to celebrate each other. I think we want to sort of point out the specialness of who we are and our friends. And there's not enough opportunities. We should start inventing things.
Isn't it true that when you see somebody and they say it's my birthday, you almost act surprised, but...
Yes.
We all have birthdays. It's like not a big deal. It's my birthday. It is your birthday. Oh, cool. Happy birthday. What's a big deal? It's a birthday, but it's a very special day. It's a day you came out of your mother's vagina. It's a very special day.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
I came out of her belly.
Oh.
And so did Robin.
Yeah, me too.
I came out of her back.
Oh, Lord.
It was a,
now, that explains a lot.
So you're not Jesus is what you're saying.
No.
No, that's not in the Bible, Old or New Testament.
Came out of the ass.
That
All right. I don't know why you give me this much time. You know I can fonder and slide off the tracks.
Not even a word.
I don't even know. Is fonder a word?
Not even a word.
No.
It's fonder.
Ask the teacher.
I think you mean squander.
Squander.
No, I don't think he meant that either.
You don't?
Robin, I think we can work well together. So this Robin.
So you see what I got here?
I noticed.
Did you see this? Did you get one of these?
Oh, the AARP.
I got this fucking AARP thing in the mail. American Association of Retired People. That in the United States, I don't know if they have it all over the world. I mean, we broadcast all over the world. Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Part of that was found. Wow.
I think you said retarded instead of retired.
No, I don't think so.
Play the tape back.
Okay. Anyhow. I turned 50 in September.
Woo!
You will turn 50 in September.
What did I say?
You
I think
did.
You said I turned.
Thank
I
you,
said
Sherry.
I said I turn okay. 50.
Oh, I'm just clarifying for the audience.
Like you said turn.
I thought you said turn too. Yeah.
Okay. Right, and did so Tony Robin Soprano say I get it or I did it?
Did it.
See, and that's not right. Apparently, if you read the subtitles, it says he said I get it, which didn't make any sense to me.
It didn't, no.
Right? And even some professional TV reviewer said that he said I did it, which makes sense.
Right.
Right? In this concept of the story, and other people said, no, he says I get it because that's what you say when you're on peyote.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh? Do you, Sopranos?
Sopranos? You don't watch it? HBO?
Sopranos?
HBO?
No. No, I'm an alto.
It's not TV. So I got this fucking thing in the mail, which bummed me out so much. And I, first of all, 50 is not an age for retirement in this country.
65, I think.
Well, yes, legally. Like 62 and a half, I think it is, but you get some benefits. But I mean, that was when people were only living to be like, you know, in their early 60s, right? So, right. Yeah, but I mean, God, I'd love to retire at 50.
Yeah, me too.
That would be really, really nice.
Well, maybe they figure, hell, we're in Silicon Valley. We're probably retiring already on our .com millions.
I guess. Are you just starting a new job? you just shifted careers.
Right? I've got at least 25 years to do this.
At least?
At least 25 years.
That's how many lawsuits?
Oh. How many fires will I start?
So it's weird because this seems archaic somehow. The sense of retirement and... But they only want $12 and they give you a cool magazine, and so...
Well, you know, actually, it's not quite so bad because I think this is the time that you can at least begin to think about retirement. So if you're thinking about retirement and you're getting materials...
Oh, God.
Then you're going to plan for it. I never even thought about
it. Doesn't that mean you have to start saving money?
Yes.
Well,
honestly, Robin, honestly.
Oh, it's way too late.
Did you think at 30 and 35 you would live to see 50, 55?
No.
Right.
No.
And at my age now, they talk about retirement, setting money aside for... Honestly, will I see 70, 75? God, I don't know.
Dude, I'm not sure I'm going to fucking see September.
Well, don't say that.
Why?
It just stays in the air and it's negative.
You don't really believe that, do you? Are you superstitious that way?
Not really superstitious, but September's my birthday and I don't want anything to ruin my day.
When is your birthday?
September 27th.
So you're just a few days apart.
Yeah.
And a few years. Yeah.
Robin's on the...
And on our queue, like, you know, this much.
Wow. Was that necessary?
I didn't think you'd understand.
Was complimentary to you.
I just threw out the wow. Is that necessary part?
Yeah, see? Robin got it.
See, I took it as complimentary to
really?
You.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
At what point was I in there?
He's buying it.
He's talking about that continuum that we all think about every moment of the day.
So I don't know what to do with this thing. Should I fill it out? If it's $10, did you join?
No.
Okay. Sorry. Maybe I should join. Make the most of life over 50. This feels like it's talking to people who have been working in factories for their entire life. Please keep this card until you receive your membership kit. It will include a new coverage, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure you'll find using it more than just a few of your benefits. Discount on travel and other services. Access to health-related benefits. That like becomes an important thing you start to think about.
Well, what can you get a movie ticket for?
$10.
A spokesman for your rights.
There you go.
Community programs and volunteer opportunities. Safe driving course. Grandma. Reduce legal fees.
How to pass your eye test.
E-I-O. All right, here's what we're going to do. We can take another break at this point. So happy birthday. We're going to go celebrate afterwards. We're going to have dinner.
Yeah, we're going to have a nice dinner.
All right. Did you buy something nice for yourself? Did you kind of get yourself
yet.
No?
I have been looking. I couldn't decide whether to buy a new car.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's a big deal. That's a grown-up thing to do.
It's a grown-up thing to do, but I don't, you know, and so I'm debating whether or not I want to do that, but I'm going to start with another bike.
Okay.
I'm buying a new bike. I've been looking for a new bike. Last year,
10-speed?
So, well, last year I bought a bike to ride back and forth to work.
Cruiser.
A cruiser. Oh, it's a 7-speed cruiser. Well, lately I've been riding my bike on the weekends quite a bit and doing a 20-mile bike ride, which on a cruiser is a challenge because, you know, you're really pumping pretty hard up those hills on 7 speeds, you know. So I'm now looking for either a road bike or a hybrid.
Cool.
So I'll start with that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would look at a hybrid. I wouldn't go with
something comfortable, but then there are some...
The road bikes are too delicate.
They're not as comfortable.
And they're also very delicate.
Yeah.
I have a mountain bike, which I know is overkill, but it's nice to have a full suspension, especially when you get into 50.
Yeah.
And you got that big ass, it kind of cushions the blows.
Yeah. Well, I borrowed one last weekend for my bike ride, and that was nice. It was a little
too... An ass?
Well, I borrowed it from an ass. How's
okay.
that?
There you go.
I borrowed it from my ex-husband.
Okay.
Oh, you weren't kidding.
I wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
A nice one.
We'll insert the rim shot. Don't worry. Okay.
So I think a mountain bike would be just a little too much suspension. So a hybrid or a road.
Too much suspension.
Yeah. Because I've been riding on paved trails, you know, and I was doing a little bit more bouncing than I would like to. But the front suspension was... Oh, yeah, you can...
That's tunable.
Okay.
Yeah. So he probably has it set wrong. It's your ex-husband.
I know. What can you
expect? If there's a knob, he probably turned it the wrong way.
You bet.
There you go. Have you ever ridden my bike?
No,
You should ride my bike.
Yeah, there's only like 8 inches difference between our height.
Hey, go ahead.
I have nothing to say. All right. Nothing to say.
Would you like to
throw in something about the 8 inches?
It was it was a softball. It was right across the plate. I mean, you know, even Benito.
All right. That's what he said last night.
There you go.
All right.
Why are you rubbing yourself? You're rubbing your left tit.
I am.
Why
I don't
are
know.
You rubbing your tit?
I don't know. Right when we were...
She said that, man. Your hand just went right for that. Oh, man.
I tweaked him there when no one was looking.
God bless America.
God bless Robin. Both All of right. you.
All right. We'll take another break. We're going to come back with Jason Nathanson. A little bit more tunage here. And
this is my favorite song, by the way.
Which one?
Out of the whole night right now, this next song.
You don't even know what it is.
Yeah. It's Rich Emanuel's Dead.
Okay.
Yeah.
From
Counting Crows.
Counting Crows. Are you going to see them this summer?
I didn't think they were coming out. Did they?
They always do.
Yeah, they always do. But yeah, of course. Robin, I can't because they came around last time. I didn't see them. I didn't really care to see them.
Well, Robin took me to see Counting Crows.
Nice.
A couple years ago.
We got so fucked up.
Did you? We did.
We got so.
Was it at the winery where you guys were drinking wine?
I forgot
it wasn't
about
the wine,
that.
But
it
yes,
wasn't the
yeah.
wine,
we were so. Fucked up.
So much so that we were in the wrong seats in for the wrong a good seats, two right. or three.
Yeah, yeah. For the first three or four songs, we were right in the like in the second row, right in the middle.
And we kept
and like staring at Adam, like woo!
And he was only just a few feet away. We
I
felt
video.
Like we had won the lottery.
Yeah,
know?
I have video.
Until
of that,
someone tapped us on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, we had to move
to the other same row, but the other end."
Oh,
and those would
bad.
Have been great seats had we sat there initially. But sort of staring at his larynx to begin with. Is that the right word? Pharynx? Larynx?
Larynx.
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 Oh, well,
larynx.
Bless you guys.
Am I wrong?
Larynx.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. Hold on a second. Hold on. Please. We need get nice and close to the mic. Give it to us again.
Larynx.
Perfect.
Wow.
Okay.
Very nice.
We have a new sound.
I thought it was larynx.
No.
That's what I played in high school.
I did too until they made me stop.
I can't believe you actually shake your shoulders when you're at your own jokes in the studio and there's no camera on you. You should be ashamed.
I didn't know where mine was in high school.
All right, and scene. Okay, we're going to take another break here. Everybody get together and enjoy your little... You couldn't wait for us to take the break.
I couldn't.
You couldn't wait.
I don't think anybody heard that.
I heard it.
Well,
I did too.
All right, I'll let you rub your larynx.
By that.
Your uvula. Did I say that right? Is it uvula?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Counting Crows, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, not here, Harvey Spitali here, Sherry Stevens here, and Robin
Stevenhauser. Yeah?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. All right, stick around.
Around for more Schnauzer Logic. Got a message in my head that the papers had all come. Richard Manuel is dead, and the daylight's coming on. I've been
Welcome back. We're 40 minutes into the first hour of Schnauzer Logic. It is our 54th episode being recorded on Wednesday. It's May the 16th, 2007. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal, straightway Buddhist vegetarian lesbian attorney boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, saying welcome back and son of Vista to Barbies.
Son of Vista, Robin.
Welcome back and son of Vista to Robin.
Son of Vista.
Son of Vista, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you were so good. You were so good. Son of, welcome back to Sherry. And happy birthday, Vista.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
Yay. Happy birthday, Vista. And let's say a Sona Vista to this guy, too.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
First time you've listened to the show. 57 channels in. You don't have to answer that. Yeah, 57 channels and nothing on, but the upfronts are coming, and to tell us all about it is our good friend from deep in the heart of Los Angeles, son of Easter, Jason Nathanson. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic, my friend.
The bald Jewish guy in the one-bedroom Sherman Oaks apartment now.
Wow.
Moving out of my parents' house.
The little boy is growing up.
Yep.
Turn around. Turn
my parents
around.
Can finally have sex again.
Yes, you can. You need to work on changing those verbs around, that's all. Now, is this the first time that you've actually had your own apartment by yourself? Because I know that you've lived off by yourself before, but...
No, in San Francisco, first apartment I moved to in San Francisco was one bedroom. And when I first moved back here in West Hollywood, I had a one bedroom as well.
And do you think that's actually been cramping your style?
Yeah, that's the only thing.
You know, as I started to form the question in my mouth, I realized it was going to come out wrong, and it was not meant as a slam, although I'll take it. But, I mean, did you find that living with your folks kind of changed the way that you move through the world?
A little bit. I mean, it's harder to come home drunk and hide that from them, you know. You come home drunk in your own place, there's nobody to answer to.
Except the toilet.
That was actually funny.
I know. I looked at
Parvise. Thank you, Jason.
I looked at Parvise to give him a look, and then I thought, yeah, it was funny. All right. And then I gave him a smile. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be so judgmental.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Please, thank you.
I apologize.
No, it's been nice. My parents are good people, and, you know.
They are.
It's easygoing.
You want to throw out a plug for their business?
Brownstone Screen Printing, bspplus.com. Get everything you needed printed.
They do silk screening of pretty much everything for really famous people.
Yeah.
Isn't that true? Haven't you?
They've done some stuff for some famous people, yeah. But I mean, not.
They've done
not
things. Too, they've done some things. They've done some stuff. Some things. Some stuff.
They've done a few things, you know.
Everybody in Los Angeles is famous. So,
yeah.
So when do you move into your new gigs?
Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you hired a moving company, or
I did. I've exhausted all my friends at this point.
That's the sign of actually being an adult.
Yeah.
You can no longer ask your friends to.
Yep.
You can't bribe them with pizza and beer anymore.
Nope.
Well, congratulations. So
we'll
get the new number for you. We'll be able to check in with you at your new digs. That's
absolutely
great. I'm actually going to be down next month, so maybe I'll have a chance to do a little
hey,
housewarming
come on
there.
By.
All right.
Party time.
He's lonely.
Yeah.
You can tell. He's really lonely.
So excited to share the apartment with somebody.
Yeah. I actually stayed at his parents' home.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. When I went down to audition for Win Ben Stein's Money, Jason let me sleep on his parents' couch in the basement. And how old was I at that point? Like 45? 44? It was weird.
And the funny thing is, we don't even have a basement. I don't know where you were sleeping.
That was so weird.
Was it weird for you?
Yes, because I thought to myself, what was my dad doing when he was 45? And I thought, I don't think he was sleeping on your grandparents' couch. It was, yes, I realized I was living in a different universe at that point.
Yeah.
It was just very, very bizarre.
Well, welcome to the past 2 years of my life.
All right, there you go. So, we were talking a little bit today about what we wanted to get into, and this is a big time in TV season, although the shows are winding down for the sort of 2006-2007 season. The networks get together, and they have these things called upfronts.
Yes.
And what's so interesting is, in years past, for example, people would not know anything about the grosses for movies. They wouldn't know what the upfronts were. This stuff would all happen behind the scenes, but now there's so much cable, there's so much internet, that people know about about grosses. They know about the upfronts. I mean, you can see that to them, stuff like PerezHilton.com, right? And mm-hmm. Drudge and shit like that. So everybody's kind of an industry insider. But for those folks who are not, what's going on?
The upfronts are basically where the networks sell the ad time for the upcoming season. It's where they announce their new shows, and they also announce cancellations. So a couple things have been canceled officially that we've been expecting to be canceled. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip is officially gone. They must have been listening to the show 2 weeks ago because Thank God You're Here is also gone.
Actually, I like that show, Thank God You're Here. I mean, it's decent. It's not hilarity, but it's decent to see some celebrity likes try to do improv.
Isn't it mostly painful, though? You can tell who came up through the Groundlings or Second
exactly.
City and who didn't.
No, I totally agree. The painfuls are kind of fun to watch, but no, there was some talent I've seen in the last couple episodes, but it by far is not terribly interesting to keep it for a
like
season.
Like, the folks who've come from Second City or whatever, uh-huh. they're terrific, because they yes. for them it's an improv game. And in fact, you and Melanie have taught improv games,
right?
I mean,
right.
that's what you guys do, right?
Right?
Theater sports and stuff like that.
Right.
And so,
water sports?
What?
Water sports?
No.
Theater.
Oh.
I haven't seen water in a long time.
Yeah, once again, edited out. Just give us that word.
Which word? Stephen Zucker. I don't know.
Stephen Zucker.
What's his last name?
Who?
Stephen.
Stephen who?
Your last name.
My name? Stephen. I said Stephen Zania.
Stephen Zania.
But you've been changing it all.
I have been, because I don't remember that one, but I know Stephen's.
So tell us about what's been canceled.
Also, the Black Donnellys, which had replaced Studio 60, that's gone officially.
All right.
On CBS, a surprise for me, a show actually got into this season, Jericho. That's gone. That was about nuclear war and the whole world.
How many times can you blow up the world, though? That first episode's done.
No more of that. The Class has also been canceled. That was one of those sitcoms.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
No big deal. On ABC, The Knights of Prosperity, which was actually pretty funny, one of their comedies. Haven't seen it around in a while. It was pretty much rumored that was going to be gone. That's officially gone. Show Me the Money, that's the William Shatner game show.
Oh, God. Okay.
That aired like three times.
Yeah.
That's gone. And Extreme Makeover is gone as well. And I don't know if it doesn't say if that's the home edition, where they tear down somebody's house and then build it back up again, or if it's the one where they do major reconstructive surgery on somebody's face.
Now, didn't that guy who was the host of Extreme...
Ty Pennington.
Yeah, so Sherry's nodding her head. So.
Yeah, he got arrested for drunk driving.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, no big deal these day and age, right?
Well, unless he's Paris Hilton.
Yeah. Right, and then he goes to jail.
Now, what do you think about that?
I think that's... that's what should happen. I mean, she flaunted the law, and good for the judge for sending her to jail, and I think she's actually going to go to jail.
But do you think that she should be sent to this special jail in Arizona where, like, the warden is, super...
That's not going to happen. That was rejected.
Oh, it was rejected.
Yeah, the warden offered that probably to try to get some more publicity for his program, because he's been trying to do that for the past year.
Okay.
But that was officially rejected. So she'll go to the women's correctional facility here in Los Angeles.
Which means she'll be there for what? A short amount of time, right?
She's supposed to be there for 45 days. I bet she serves half of that or less.
Okay. So 20, 25 days, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe that'll just straighten her up.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that'll work.
Also, not necessarily canceled, but not on the schedule right now, is The Apprentice.
Okay.
For NBC.
That's right. That's a big deal.
Yeah. And it'll probably return mid-season, but they just haven't found a place for it yet. And the future of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader is up in the air, which I know saddens many here at the Schnauzer Logic. I haven't actually seen the show.
I've only seen it once. It stars Jeff Foxworthy, so that
right there. That's all you need to know, really.
That can't be bad, right?
Yeah, sure. I'm not a big Foxworthy fan.
American Idol.
Yes.
Ratings slipping. Big time slipping.
They are?
Big time.
Yeah, House actually beat it for the first time last night.
Absolutely.
Right on.
And
what do you attribute this to?
It's a boring show.
I think it's fatigue and a little bit of scandal. I think people are not as confident in the show, in the integrity of the show, as they once were.
Really?
And Sanjaya is gone.
Sanjaya
thing. I mean, I don't watch the show, but you can't help but, read all the stuff about it. And he was in the top three for a couple weeks, and then all of a sudden he was kicked off after the big move to, vote for the worst. So I think people are a little wary of that. It's still a ratings monster for them, though, and it's still going to do well. And I will actually be at the finale next week at the Kodak Theater.
Wow.
I drew the short straw or the long straw, however you want to look at it.
Do you get to wear a tux?
I don't think I'll be wearing a tux.
You get to wear one of those t-shirts that looks like a tux?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'll wear.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break. We'll gather our forces. We'll play another tune here in our theme of the dead today. Because coming up in the second hour of the show today, we're going to be talking with Margalit Fox, obituary writer for the New York Times.
And Jerry Falwell, too, right?
I don't think... did she write Jerry Falwell's obituary today?
Oh, no, I thought he was going to be on the show.
Oh.
Going with your theme of the dead.
Oh, you...
Oh, come on. Come on, you thought that was funny?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
Sorry.
All right.
I'm a little more... I'm still concerned about Paris Hilton because she doesn't strike me as very bright. And so it feels like you're beating a dog that doesn't know any better. It's like, if you don't put the punishment next to the crime, it has to be so close in time that they understand that they did something wrong. I think for her, it's too far away. It's not like, listen, there's no love lost between Paris Hilton and Lai. I mean, you can read about that online, okay? But there's, thank you for that, for the snicker. But I think she's not bright. I think she may have an IQ of 100. You know, I mean, wow. I think she may be sort of, you know, sort of super moron kind of, or subnormal.
I like that super moron.
But
super
so moron. That means yeah. She could get out of it?
I think you're talking about it in the upfronts. No, but I think what's the purpose behind putting her in prison? It isn't rehabilitation because I don't think she'll understand. So then becomes retribution, and that seems mean.
No, it becomes reality. I think it's a great thing that she goes to prison to let her know, you know, there's a life outside your little fantasy world, and you screwed up, and you're going to find
but
out what
if she
about.
Doesn't really understand that? Because here's the thing. I don't think it'll make any difference. She'll have a really shitty experience for 15 or 20 days, and then when she gets out, do you think that there's any possibility that she'll be different? No, because she's going to go back into the same protected space again, and she's not the kind of person that will... Listen, there are people like Robert Downey Jr., right? And they've been through the ringer, and they come out the other end, and it's like, holy shit, you know what? I don't have much time left on this planet. I better really, like, get my shit together, right? And they try. But
maybe this will be a wake-up moment for her. You can't count her out. You can't count her out.
But you're right. Maybe they... I mean, it's not a joke, but maybe they should take away, like, the limousine, the stuff
yeah.
like that. Things that make her life beautiful.
Take away her allowance.
Right? Take away her makeup. Take away her poodle.
I'm serious
no,
about
that's
that.
A,
I think that's
true.
A more reasonable...
There, she would be like, all right.
Right, for a month, no makeup... Right,
no limousines. Right,
right. Public transportation.
Right,
but that's what jail is doing: is taking away those things. If they were to just say, "Oh, we're going to take those things away," she would.
She'd find a way.
Everybody would make it happen for her anyway.
But her mind will be so occupied in jail that this is such a new environment. But if you take the stuff away from her environment, that's probably more gut wrenching than going to jail.
And it's more than just a life lesson for her. It's for society. It's for all the girls who follow her. Who think that she can do no wrong and there's no consequences.
Right.
Hopefully it'll teach them a lesson that, hey, when you fuck up, you know, bad things happen.
Right.
All right. So here's the deal. We need to take a break.
Yes.
But we're actually running out of time. So what we're going to do is...
And we promised we weren't going to do that to you, right, Jason?
Yeah, no. And I want to do the segment with Jason. So here's what we're going to do. And we'll just kind of let the audience in on it. So when you're listening to this at home, you're actually going to hear a song at this point. But for us in the studio, we're gonna come right back to you. All right?
We're going
to
power through it.
We're going to power through this, and then I'll just insert the song later on.
All right?
That way we'll be able to get to Margalit Fox, because I don't want to make her wait, because she's on the East Coast and it's late.
Yes.
All right? All right, so you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Shh, everybody just wink and wink. We'll just pretend it's Friday's show. Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, Parviz Vitali, and...
Robin Stevens and I are...
All right, we're
my
all...
My voice changed.
Oh, buddy, you gotta please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
If they found me dead, dead and gone, my spirit fled, my life fed and my body done. I'd be in a better place, a peaceful smile upon my face, my clammy fingers wrapped around the gun. If they found me dead as a lox, and on my plate a burger from Jack in the Box, and go to work at 8. Do that stupid job I hate. Wear the toes out of my socks. As wood, but really looking for a dead guy pretty good. In my dear departed state, I'd be forever celibate. I would have got a lot more if I could. If they found me dead, dead and gone, my spirit fled, my life fit and my body done. I made a lot of crummy plans, but now I wouldn't give a damn. The coolest cat in Forest Lawn.
This is where we put the song in. Okay, here we go.
Serving the universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic.
I know, she's been laughing. This is a new experience for her. Welcome back. We are some number of minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, blah, 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 blah. And we're sitting here with Sherry and Robin and Parviz. And on the phone with us is Jason Nathanson. Welcome back, my friend, son of Vista.
That last song you played was awesome.
Wasn't it cool?
You got to send that to me.
I will. I'll download it, rip it, compress it, and then BitTorrent it all over to you.
Really quickly, Jason, tonight is Bob Barker's special.
Yes, it is.
The last episode of Price is Right.
I'm trying to work out to go to the taping of the last show. We're going to cover that at the station, so.
Yeah, very cool. What's tonight?
No. Tonight's the last special.
Oh, got it.
The last show tapes June 6th.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, okay. Because you understand we're trying to get this segment done so we can call her on the phone.
Absolutely.
In New York. You understand the concept
absolutely.
Of time.
Absolutely.
All right. I think we should have Paris Hilton live with you for 45 days. It will serve all of the same functions as prison. All right, here's the thing. Now, we did this a few weeks ago with network drama pilots, and what I did was I had a list of pilots for the upcoming season, some of which were real and some of which were fake, and the idea was for you guys to figure out which ones were real and which ones were fake, all right? Now, this week, what we have are some comedy pilots. I'll read one from each of the networks, and then you will tell me at the end of the game whether you think it's real or fake, all right?
Yes.
All right, here we go. We're starting off with ABC.
Can I play?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course you can play. Oh, man. I'm going to make you apologize to Marguerite. We're going to apologize to why Leighton calling her.
All right.
All right, fine. Okay, so the first show is from ABC. The name of the show is Carpoolers, an ensemble show that follows the lives of four very different men who carpool to work with each other every day. All right, that's Carpoolers on ABC. The second show,
The Big Bang Theory. Science geek befriends a woman who is out of their league. The Big Bang Theory.
What?
The Big Bang Theory. Science geeks befriend a woman who is out of their league. The Big Bang Theory. All right.
I meant that as an exclamatory
word. You're writing that down? All right. On Fox, me and Lee. Suffering from back pain and a disappointing life, Joel Salzberg gets to more than he bargained for when he undergoes bionic back surgery in Lee Major's secret basement lab. The show is me and Lee. The next show is on NBC. The name of the show is Lipshit Saves the World. I don't have a description for that show. I just have a show name, Lipshit Saves the World. And finally, on the CW, the name of the show is MILF and Cookies. Four single moms living in an apartment complex realize it takes a village to raise their kids, MILF and Cookies. All right, so here we go. The four shows are Carpoolers, The Big Bang Theory, Me and Lee, Lipshit Saves the World, and MILF and Cookies. Jason, which one's real? Which one's fake?
I'm going to go with Carpoolers being real.
All right.
I'm going to go... I hope Lipshit Saves the World is real. That sounds awesome.
All right. The Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory... I'm going to go with real on that, too.
All right. Me and Lee, the guy suffering from back pain?
I got to call fake on that.
Are you calling shenanigans?
And...
MILF and Cookies?
I call hijinks on that as well.
All right. Sherry?
I think they're all real except for Lipshit Saves the World.
All right. Robin?
I think that they're all fake.
Okay. And Parviz, you thought that they
were... all fake except number four, the one before MILF and Cookies.
All right. And here we go. Once again, they're all real.
That was actually funny. Oh, man. It's the new shows.
I wish you guys could see the four faces I'm looking at here. The mouths are hung open. They're all
they have MILF and Cookies in there?
They're all fucking real.
I was looking at the new shows, and I knew Carpoolers was real, but I hadn't heard of any of the others. And I was going to credit you for brilliance.
Thank you. I wish I could have made up MILF and Cookies.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Stifler's mom in that?
Oh, man. There were two others that I wanted to choose, too. One's called Area 57. Office comedy set in a secure location in the Nevada desert where the staff must look after a crude, manipulative alien. I'm in hell. When a successful Wall Street guy dies, hell is too full to accept him. So he's assigned to live in hell on earth where he's stripped of all his luxuries he once enjoyed. And
I had a movie idea about something like that.
And Sam Who. When a woman wakes up from a coma with amnesia, she quickly realizes that she was an awful person and starts her life over again is not as easy as she thinks. Now, don't confuse that with My Name is Earl. This is Sam Who. Oh, man. And how many of these will actually see the schedule in the fall, and how long do you think they'll be around for, my friend?
Well, it's interesting. I was looking at the shows that were canceled last season.
Yes.
41 shows were canceled last season. 41 right. New shows were canceled last season.
Wow.
I mean, so the chances of any of those making it and sticking around are slim to none. Some of the good new shows coming out. Have you seen there's a clip online for Bionic Woman? NBC's doing a remake of the show.
Yes.
And the clip online that I saw, it's like a minute long, and it looks awesome. So hopefully that turns out to be good. And Heroes, they're doing a spin-off of Heroes, which will be a 6-episode special spin-off where they'll introduce new characters, and you'll get to vote on the new characters you like online, and those new characters will make it into the show.
I need to let you go because we're up against the calling Margalit, but I have a question for you. Is your new apartment anywhere near a runway?
It's actually further from the airport.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. You're going to miss the plane.
How do we know that it's actually you calling?
You're going to miss it.
All right, my friend. Well, listen, thank you so very much. Jason Nathanson, you can read his blog over at randomshow.blogspot.com.
Go have fun over there.
Have fun over there. Tomorrow morning on KSCO?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Are you doing that again?
I will be on.
That's terrific.
Taped and ready to go.
All right, good. And you and Sam and the other boys down in Southern Cal, what's the story?
Yeah, we're down here.
All right, good. Oh, and I wanted to give a quick shout out here before we get out of time. Hold on a second here. Allie Waller sent me a note. Let me read this to you. I'll send this to you. They're having the Katrina Comedy Benefit next Thursday, May the 24th, down in Los Angeles with Sarah Silverman, Paul F. Tompkins, Teague Notaro, Brendan Small, and Chris Fairbanks. And it's going to be hosted by Andrew Donnelly. It's at the Mint at 6010 West Pico in L.A., and it's benefiting the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast. So we're going to pass this on, and maybe you can go over there, huh?
What, do you think I wasn't cool enough to already get that? I'm not on the list already?
No, but this is an excuse for me to actually read it out loud for the audience.
Yes, I'm going to go. It'll be awesome.
All right, thanks. Fucking amateurs. You're all just fucking amateurs.
Why do you look at me?
Because I can't look at the birthday girl. All right, here's what we're going to do.
I didn't say anything.
All right. Hey, dude, thank you so very much.
Bye, guys.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back on the other side, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic, and stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
I started to swerve, and then I saw the jag slide into the curve. I know I'll never forget that horrible sight. I guess I found out for myself that everyone was right.
Fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 6 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com, Robin at schnauzerlogic.com, and we're also on the web at schnauzerlogic.com. I think I said that. Did I say that?
You did.
I always get nervous when we have guests that I'm really excited to talk to. Those that I don't care so much about, those interviews go much better. But I did preparation today.
Oh, good.
And then I had a computer crash.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, word. Anyway, let's say welcome back to Sherry Stevens, Sonavista. Let's say welcome back to Parviz Vitali.
Sonavista Robin.
Now, you're up for this, right? I mean, you're not going to be sitting back here and just...
Sleeping?
No.
No.
All right. And let's say welcome back to Robin.
Stevens and Aya.
Sonavista!
He did that pretty nicely, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
All right, good. So the last couple of shows, we have had a couple of guests read for us some amazing obituaries. The first one, I think, was Ruben Caslow, the smoked fish magnate. And then a couple weeks later, Conrad Spiz, right? Another smoked fish titan. And after we got these two obituaries, I looked and I saw that they had the same byline. And they were really little literary gems. You know, they were not sort of a mere recitation of facts. These were stories that brought you in and hooked you and made you care about the lives of these people. And I thought, it takes a real talent to do something like that. So let me find out who the writer is and let me contact her. Let me see if I can actually get her to join us on the show. And it turns out the writer of both of those obituaries, along with countless others, is Margalit Fox. It says here, as a reporter in the celebrated obituary news department of the New York Times, Margalit Fox has dispatched some of the leading cultural figures of our era. She's also written the obituaries of many unsung heroes who managed quietly to touch history, from a textile conservator who washed Napoleon's nightshirt to home economist who invented stovetop stuffing. And recently, she's memorialized the likes of Susan Sontag, Betty Friedan, and Tom Poston. Reprinted in newspapers throughout the United States and around the world, Ms. Fox's work has been anthologized in Best Newspaper Writing 2005 and elsewhere. She's a former editor at the New York Times Book Review and has written numerous articles on language, culture, and the ideas for The Times, New York Newsday, Variety, and other publications. And her very first book, Talking Hands, What Sign Language Reveals About the Mind, is going to be published by Simon & Schuster this coming summer. Ms. Fox holds a bachelor and master's degree in linguistics from Stony Brook University and a master's degree in journalism from Columbia University, and she lives in Manhattan with her husband, the writer and critic George Robinson. Ladies and gentlemen, let's put your hands together and say, Son of East, and welcome to our lines, Margalit Fox. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, I mentioned right before we got on that I was so proud of myself because I had actually been doing some show prep because I wanted to think about the questions we were going to have a chance to ask you today. And in the process of that, Microsoft Word crashed, and I lost everything that I'd put together, and I scrambled again to try to recapture what I thought was some very good questions. So they may be a little out of order, so I apologize. Because the first thing that I wrote down was, do you like cheese? Not sure where that comes from.
That's a deep epistemological question, and I don't think I can really answer it without referring you to my attorney. Maybe the cheese issue was in your mind because of the smoked fish stuff, and fish, as you know, is parve. It can be served either with meat meals or with dairy meals and still be kosher. So I can't answer your question directly other than to say it would be possible to have cheese if one were having smoked fish.
Now, I have no further questions, Your Honor. Your witness. You studied journalism. You obviously have a background in linguistics. You didn't start off in the obituary department. I wonder, was it something that you were drawn to or something that you got dragged into?
It's something I fell into, and it turns out, this is an ironic thing to say given what I do, but I feel that it was the writing about death is the work I was born to do, and I'll explain why in a minute. I fell into it in the sense that no child, at least no child that I have ever met, comes home from second grade clutching a theme that says, when I grow up, I want to be an obituary writer. I certainly was not such a child anyway. I've been at the New York Times for 13 years, starting in 1994, and for the first 10 of those years, I was an editor at the Times Book Review. And it's a wonderful job. You get to be around smart people and around books all day. But I had always envisioned myself as a writer rather than someone who got paid to clean up other people's prose. Mm-hmm. And it so happened that about a year or two into my stay at the Book Review, a Book Review editor left the section and was appointed obits editor at the Times. And so a number of us, including me, because we have this personal connection to the man, began writing freelance obits for him. And you will see throughout the Times other staffers besides the staffers like me who are specifically assigned to obits will do obits now and again when their schedule permits. So never having written an obituary before, I gamely set out to learn the job on the fly and spent the next 8 or so years contributing sporadically, but reasonably often, to the section. And then about 2.5 years ago, in 2004, we had a couple of retirements in the obituary news department. Out of that, they created one staff job, which they advertised, and of course I raced to apply for it and was lucky enough to get it.
Wow. So it sounds like this was kind of kismet.
It really was. And, you know, who knew? As I said in a lecture I gave at the 92nd Street Y this morning here in New York, you certainly don't start out life thinking you're going to be a writer of obits. No one does, but it turns out, and it is, in that sense, the strangest job in America, but my feeling is I also have the best job in America.
And is there a particular style? Because I read through a number of your obituaries today online, and you have such a clear style of writing. It seems very personally yours, and I have some examples that I'm going to go through in a bit, which make me smile every time. Did you always write that way, and you brought that to this job? Did you have to modify the way that you wrote? Did someone teach you sort of this is what an obituary needs to look like in order to make people feel okay about it?
That's an interesting question. I mean, of course, for obituaries, as for most genres in daily journalism, there are rules, and the obit is probably one of the most formulaic genres of any kind of a news story because there are certain crucial elements that absolutely have to be there. If you wrote a story about someone and didn't put in their date and place of death, the cause of death, well, you might have written a profile, but it wouldn't be an obituary. So there are a number of things that have to be there. And for me, this is what intrigues me about the obit as a literary form, that it's a challenge to write. And as you know, historically, obits were the poor stepchild of journalism. The obit section was Siberia. You know, you dreaded the day that they would send you there. It meant the paper was putting you out to pasture. That's changing, fortunately, but I think one of the reasons obits have such a bad rap is there's so much of this formulaic junk that weighs them down, so much ballast or boilerplate or whatever you want to call it, that it's very easy, all too easy, to write an obit that is a crushing bore. And so for me, thinking about the obit as a kind of literary form, you know, in the 21st century, where is this form going to go? How can we play with it within the bounds, number one, of propriety, given the subject matter, and number two, within the very real constraints on form that have to operate in the genre? Given those, how can we push and pull against those constraints just a little bit, ever so gently, to try to get something that has all the requisite elements in it, but at the same time is lively and sings, and maybe even, as subversive as this sounds, makes people laugh when they read it.
And they do. We're talking with Margalit Fox of the New York Times. She's an obituary writer. And what I thought was extraordinary was, and I'm sure you do this on purpose, the first sentence of your obituaries, it is so perfectly, it's just perfect. I've got just a couple of examples. Thomas Rogers, a novelist whose Riley comic books chart the rocky landscape where youthful alienation and youthful ardor meet straight-backed WASP propriety, died on Sunday in State College, Pennsylvania. He was 79. Here's another one. Tony Scott, a distinguished jazz clarinetist who in the 1950s helped steer his instrument out of the swing era and into the sax-infested waters of bebop, died on Wednesday at his home in Rome. He was 85 and lived in Italy for many years. Herman Stein, a little-known craftsman who, unseen but very much heard, helped terrify the audiences of a spate of classic horror and science fiction films, died on March 15th at his home in Los Angeles. And Bob Carroll Jr., a founding writer of I Love Lucy, who helped introduce millions of viewers to the joys of frenzied grape stomping, warp speed chocolate stuffing, and the increasingly tasty 46-proof patent medicine Vita Vegemin, died on January 26th. and his home in Los Angeles. Each one of those first sentences, even if you're not a regular obituary writer, now you have to read the rest of the story.
Well, thank you. That is the absolute best thing an obit writer can hear, because for the reasons that I just explained, the lead paragraph in an obit is a killer. You have all of these required elements that have to be there. It sounds like figure skating. You know, there's all these required elements, but how do you keep those in and make it art at the same time? And if you diagrammed it out on paper, you would see that in the lead paragraph of an obit, the way it's constructed is, you know, a time-honored formula that has barely changed in 100 years or more. You don't even have a full sentence in which to describe what this person did. You have a relative clause. You know, you have those half dozen or 10 words between that follow the comma and the word who, and precede the word died. So it's like writing haiku, and for the writer it's a real challenge, and sometimes it's incredibly frustrating, but when you get it working, it's really exhilarating.
Is it harder to write about someone who is famous or infamous, or someone who is sort of a relative unknown?
I love writing about relative unknowns, and I think most obit writers do. It's what I call the unsung backstage players, or I like to think of them as people who put a wrinkle in the social fabric. And what I mean by that is people whose names you've never heard of. And this fellow Herman Stein, the Hollywood composer, is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. You've never heard of him, and you could pass him on the street not knowing who he was or what he did. But his life work affected every single one of us. You know, we've all been to Creature from the Black Lagoon and heard sure. this famous, you know, rising three-note theme. Herman Stein wrote that. The same thing with, I had a woman named Ruth Seems, S-I-E-M-S, who died about 2 years ago. I don't think she'd ever been in the pages of the New York Times before. I found her notice of her death trolling some small-town Indiana paper online. And who was Ruth Seems? She was a home economist who worked for 40, 50 years for General Foods. She invented something, and I actually downloaded the patent for it, that was an instant preparation made from dried bread that became known as stovetop stuffing.
Wow.
Again, you've never heard of her. They sell literally tens of millions of boxes of the stuff at Thanksgiving season alone. And Ruth Seems, God bless her, to her everlasting credit, gave us one unimpeachable gift. She happened to die in November, and the New York Times was able to run her obit the Wednesday of Thanksgiving week.
Wow. It sounds like, I think you said, perhaps just in passing, that these were your people. Do you consider them your charge, that you're responsible for, in some way, introducing them and giving them the proper send-off?
I do have the sense that there is the sense of having, I don't want to overinflate it, but it's a kind of sacred trust. Now, that said, I need to be very clear and do our standard disclaimer. Obituary news articles in newspapers, particularly major papers, are truly news articles like any other in the paper. Mm-hmm. In other words, they are not eulogies. We don't say, you know, died surrounded by his adoring, weeping relatives, touched the life of everyone he met. We leave that for the preachers and the rabbis. These are news stories. They are held to the same journalistic standards as any other story. They're required to be balanced. If the person was some kind of a heel in public life, you find a way to say it. That said, when I do these anonymous people, the unsung heroes, I really do feel that I'm inhaling the life of a stranger through this kind of rapid reporting and speed reading of old crumbling newspaper clippings that we have to do, and then exhaling that life, I hope fully formed and accurate and ideally engagingly written, exhaling it onto the page. And that is an extraordinary responsibility. It's a very unnatural thing to kind of do. There's almost, as I hear myself talking, I'm thinking there's almost a psychoanalytic quality about mm-hmm. it. You really have to almost inhabit a stranger. The corollary, I guess, is that trope in detective novels where the detective, in order to catch the killer, has to fully inhabit his mind. And then, of course, you know, in the end he goes crazy. Hopefully obit writers don't do that. But it has something of that quality.
So, for example, Ruben Caslow, which is how we were introduced to you, although what's so interesting is whenever we have guests on the show, which is fairly frequently, I will tell my friends, I say, oh, guess who we're having on the show this week? And I told folks that we were going to be having Mort Saul on a few weeks ago, and I got a bigger response when I told people that we were going to be having Margalit Fox on the show. More people recognized your name. From the New York Times, then, I mean, they knew who Mort was, but they were like, that name sounds familiar. And I said, she's one of the obituary writers of the New York Times. Oh my God, really? You're going to have, and so do you get fan letters?
I do. It's very gratifying. Of course, we also get letters when we screw up or when people think we screw up, and those aren't so much fun. But in this era of instant communication, reporters are more accessible than ever, which is both a blessing and a curse. On our website, nytimes.com, you can click on a reporter's byline and send that person an email. So people do have free and easy access to us, but I'm very happy to say that overwhelmingly the emails I get are lovely. Occasionally it will be from the family or from someone who knew that person. But most often, and in a way most gratifyingly, it's from strangers who say things like, I never knew so-and-so, but, for one day he came alive for me through your words. That's the best thing an obit writer can hear.
Well, Ruben Caslow, who I started to say before, we read his obituary that you wrote on the show a few weeks ago, and it was so wonderful. How long was that brought to your attention, or did you dig it up yourself? And how long did it take you to research it? Because it's not that it's a comic obituary, but your lips can't help but curl up as you go through all of the fish, including salmon, which we all know now is not smoked.
Who knew? It's most news obituaries, and I think Caslow was no exception. I can't tell you specifically without my notes in front of me, but most of them are done start to finish in one day.
Wow.
And for an obit reporter, a typical day will go like this. You get in, I get into my office at noon, which is another great part of the job, although I'm there quite late, and anywhere from a few minutes to a few hours later, the phone on my desk will ring. On the other end is the voice of my editor, who sits on another floor, and she will tell me a name. It's almost never a name I recognize. And then she hangs up, and I always feel like the next line should be, this tape will self-destruct. And I get very, very busy. Around me, my colleagues are doing the same things with their assignments. You pull the clips, you pull the yellowing clips from the morgue. You also now, fortunately, are able to work online databases, which helps a lot with speed.
Sure.
And you speed read everything. You also call the families. Sometimes you have to spend time just locating the families. People don't always think to put their phone numbers on a press release about a loved one when they're faxing it into us. And you spend the first couple of hours amassing your notes, doing the reporting, and then I try to start writing by 3 o'clock, and I file the story by 6:30. And that's pretty much how it goes most days.
Wow. And are you doing sort of one a day? Do you ever have to do more than one a day? Do you work on the weekends? People obviously die 7 days a week.
People die 7 days a week. Our department, the staff is there Monday through Friday, and there are weekend editors who handle obits that happen to come up over the weekend. We are called on to be ready to come off the bench and write every day if necessary. I would say on average, I write 3 to 4 daily stories on deadline a week, and the rest of the time I am studying and working on some of these longer obits that are written in advance and kept on file.
Sure.
So that's everybody's project for when we have downtime.
Hi, Marguerite. I just had a couple questions. One, I'm sure you've heard many times, but are you writing your own obituary?
Oh God, no! Heavens, no! I'm only 46 years old.
Oh, I know. But when the time comes. At 40, you know, at 48 or something. No, I'm kidding.
People do that. And I do have children who will say, you know, particularly if the deceased person had been a professional journalist or something like that, they'll say, you know, in the last year of his life, my dad wrote his own obit. And while, of course, we can't put that in the paper, it is often provides useful background for us. This may be a very counterintuitive answer, but it never occurred to me to do my own.
Huh.
I guess it would be just too much. Well, number one, it would be too much like the handwriting on the wall. But I think even more to the point, it would be too much like going to work.
Yeah. And you might take up a whole page on that day, huh?
I don't think I'll get a whole page. If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I might get 300 words.
Also, I'm curious, is there anybody you wouldn't write about? Is there anybody with the, maybe as you're like investigating their life and you discover something in their past and you say, oh no, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to write about this person, I don't agree with what they did.
We'd be obliged to. And as I said in a talk I gave this morning, as journalists, we're all paid to be on the fence. We're paid not to have any discernible politics. So I can't tell you what my politics are, but I can say that in the course of writing, I write 150 to 200 obits a year, and so naturally, in the course of those, it's going to fall to me to do people whose politics I don't share, and even people whose politics I find reprehensible.
Right.
That's my tough luck, and I have to do it as straight down the line as I would any other story.
And you make it as entertaining as the next one.
Well, it depends. I mean, if I can be said to have a style, I think it is that I do like to inject a kind of gentle humor into obits, you know, within the bounds of taste. I think it's perfectly reasonable to make people laugh or almost laugh or smile through the tears when they're reading about someone who may have had this, you know, very entertaining life. That said, when you're doing straight obits for important political figures, people. I did one for a major scholar of the Holocaust. Those you have to write straight. It would be totally inappropriate to and unjournalistic to use humor. So I can't have recourse to this sort of characteristic comic style for every piece. You have to choose your spots.
But it is so clearly a style. This was in the Susan Sontag in the middle, and this is the most perfect piece of prose. Through four decades, public response to Miss Sontag remained irreconcilably divided. She would describe variously as explosive, anticlimactic, original, derivative, naive, sophisticated, approachable, aloof, condescending, populist, puritanical, sybaritic, sincere, posturing, ascetic, voluptuary, right-wing, left-wing, profound, superficial, ardent, bloodless, dogmatic, ambivalent, lucid, inscrutable, visceral, reasoned, chilly, effusive, relevant, passé, ambivalent, tenacious, ecstatic, melancholic, humorous, humorless, deadpan, rhapsodic, tantankerous, and clever. No one ever called her dull.
Nice.
Thank you. I do love lists, and, you know, rhetorically they come to a writer's aid. You know, you have all of these different things, in this case conflicting things, diametrically opposed things to say about someone, and they're all so interesting. You think, how can I work this into some kind of artful piece of prose? And then you realize you don't have to. You just stick them all in a list, and that's your artful piece of prose.
But you didn't just stick them all into the list. I mean, it's so clear. It has the sense of timing of the best comedy writers that understand where the syllables need to go in order to make this flow in this poetic way.
Well, thank you. What I do remember, and it's been a couple of years since I did that piece, is I had enough time to do part of the work on her obit in advance, although I wound up writing the bulk of it on deadline because she caught us ever so slightly by surprise. But when I was doing my reading and studying of both of her work and of the, you know, millions of words that have been written about her, I just started jotting notes in my notebook of all of these conflicting adjectives that were said about her. And then I realized I had this whole thicket of adjectives that could be arranged in these pairs that were basically antonyms, and that then you could arrange each pair in a list that flowed, had a nice rhythm to it.
A nice rhythm indeed. We're talking with Marguerite Fox. She's on the East Coast. We're on the West Coast. I only asked her for about 20 minutes, and it's much later back there, so I don't want to hold you any longer because I know that you, as you say, you gave your talk at the 92nd Street Y today. And do you do that often? Do you enjoy speaking in front of crowds?
I do. I have a kind of dog and pony show that I do. I've done it on college campuses. I did it at the Y today. It's an hour-long talk on reading the obituary as a form of social history.
And lovely done, indeed. And so we're going to let you go. But before we do, I wanted to mention, as we did in the beginning, that you've got a book coming out this summer called Talking Hands, What Sign Language Reveals About the Mind. And perhaps you'll be kind enough to come back and talk with us a little bit about that then when it's released. But just sort of a little teaser, what it's about and how you got interested in this.
Well, thank you. My original training, academic training, was in linguistics. And so as a journalist, I've tried where I can to combine the two and write about language for a general readership. This book is a narrative nonfiction book in what I hope is the Oliver Sacks / Steven Pinker mold. It's an introduction for the general reader to the extraordinary and not well-known world of the signed languages of the deaf all around the world, because pretty much every country has its own deaf sign language, and what these sign languages have turned out to tell scientists about how all human language, signed and spoken, works psychologically, neurologically, inside our heads, and they turn out to reveal a great deal. The last thing I'll mention about the book is the narrative armature of the book follows an international team of four scientists, one of whom was my professor in college, which is how I latched onto this, who are working, and for the first few years were working in secret, in a remote village in the Middle East where, thanks to decades of isolation and intermarriage, an enormously large deaf population has sprung up, 40 times the rate of deafness in this village.
Wow.
As in the general population. And as a result, what has happened is an indigenous sign language has spontaneously evolved there that in this village is spoken by deaf and hearing people alike. So you can go into a house, it's a traditional Islamic community, they have polygamy, you can go into a house, a simple two-room house, the man will have three wives, 20 children, six of the children will be deaf, one of the wives will be deaf. The whole family is talking way in sign language. I had the privilege of going there on a research trip in 2003, and it's certainly the most extraordinary place I've ever been. And through this indigenous language, linguists are getting the rare opportunity to see a human language be born and document what happens when the human mind has to make language basically out of nothing. So they're getting to see the language instinct in action.
Fantastic. I mean, quite literally. I can't wait. That'll be coming out this summer?
It is coming out on August 21st.
Perfect. All right. We are talking, we've been so kind to have been able to talk with Marguerite Fox of the New York Times, who would not tell us her political persuasion, but since it's the New York Times, we know that she's a pinko liberal, and we'll say no more.
Marguerite?
Yes, thank you.
When you do your little speeches and you do your talks to in seminars and whatnot, do you ever walk off stage and say, boy, this crowd was dead?
No.
Thank you.
So you needed to put your seal on it. Is that right? You needed to put your seal on the interview.
In there.
Is that right? You were so good. You were doing so good. The great American novel. Do you think you have it in you?
You're talking to me. I doubt that very much.
He was talking to me.
All right. Good night, guys, and thanks.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye bye. That was outstanding.
That was incredible. Good. She's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Very interesting woman, and I love her approach
job. How did you discover her work?
Apparently you don't listen to the show either.
No. How did you discover her work?
So Peter Alfredtig, my friend Friggy, sent me the Ruben Caslow interview obituary a couple weeks ago. He was reading it on the train going into work in New York.
Uh-huh.
He burst out laughing. He said to me, he sent it to me, he said, "Is this funny or I'm just sick?" And I wrote back to him. Well, they were both smoked fish guys.
Okay.
But yeah, this was the first one.
The first smoked fish guy.
And I wrote back to him and I said, "You're definitely sick, but this is hysterically funny. I mean, this is brilliantly written and very, very funny." And so Sean read it on the show. And then
I remember the following week, the other salmon guy died.
Right. The other smoked fish titan died. Yes. What was his name? Not Caslow, but Conrad Spiz died. And so at that point I said, this is, first of all, it must be written by the same author. And it was. And second of all, there's too much of a wink going on here. I need to see if she, you know, we can find out who it is and would she be willing to talk to us. And she's been very polite. I mean, very accommodating, willing to come on and talk with us and give us her time. So
cool.
God, I just want to talk for hours and hours and hours.
Know,
you know, just really dig into it and I love it. Well, thank you so very much. All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take our another break at this point and come back and talk some more stuff. You got something there that you
Yeah. Are you? Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I got.
Should we finish the show now? We can kind of.
No. We got another segment, don't we?
If you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all been going very nice today.
We almost got out of an interview unscathed. Did you notice?
I noticed.
We got
almost got
out of it unscathed. It was like, good Lord.
What happened?
Nothing.
Oh, nothing.
Right. I thought Marguerite was very charming.
She was.
Yeah. She's very sweet.
Take a break. Back on the other side.
Hope it didn't insult her. God, I hope it didn't insult her.
No.
Even the music had to stop for that.
Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
When you fall in love with someone who doesn't love you, someone who treats you so badly, it ramifies your hand. Someone who doesn't want you but won't let you go. Someone who thinks you're crazy and tells you so over and over. Happens to you, you'd be better off dead. You might be surprised to learn how often it can happen. A love affair, boy, does it hurt. You fall in love with someone for whom you really care. Treat you like you was dirt. They make you feel all fat and fumbling. Make you feel kind of dirty, flirty. Hey, I'm talking to you. Did you hear what I said? fall in love with someone who doesn't love you. Better run for daylight just as fast as you can. Forget your foolish dreams and schemes, and things will work out in the end. Put some real mileage between yourself and the object of your love, my friend. Become what you see. Yes, a loser like me, someone who'd be better off dead.
Uninterrupted direct digital feed straight from the pleasure zones of your brain.
What the hell is this?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Am I on? Okay. I see the fingers over there moving. I think I'm done. I don't know half the time. What? What?
Parvis.
What? Oh. What?
Here's your pill.
Welcome back. We're 45 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Parvis.
Minus one song, by the way. It's not truly 45 minutes. We're minus one song that we have to edit in later.
Do you understand why this feels very passive-aggressive to me?
My tone?
Yeah. Kinda like that.
He has perfect eyebrows.
Thank you, Robin. At least there are two.
You're welcome. What, are you saying mine aren't?
No, I wasn't saying anything other...
Not now.
You're causing
trouble.
But at
one time.
I haven't said a word.
Did not.
You did. You asked her about whether anyone had...
Yeah, it's a legitimate question. What does she do? She's an orbituary writer.
Orbit?
Yeah, orbit chewing gum writer.
I know.
It's my birthday. It's my birthday.
Hey, I was trying to help you out.
You've done good.
I'm done? Is that what it is?
You've done good.
Thank God you said good.
We didn't ask her about it. It just occurred to me, Jerry Falwell, she didn't write his obituary,
no, she
did
didn't. She? No, she didn't. I was going to. I mean, I had an hour's worth of stuff to get to, and we already kept her longer than we were going to, so.
Jerry's too controversial.
Paris Hilton, we got that. American Idol, we got that. Allie Waller, I gave you that.
I'm kind of surprised about American Idol. Rating slipping.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We got more stuff here. We got a whole bunch of stuff here. Hold on a second. We got this.
A lot of things to read you from our mailbag, Robin.
I like that. I've been looking for an excuse to use that for so many years. Steve Golson, our good friend Steve Golson, sent us an email. Let's see.
With
Steve,
the chicken cam?
The chicken cam, yeah. www.hencam.com. It says, hi, Robin. I got called for jury duty yesterday. It was impaneled. The trial finished the same day. It was Mass General Law, blah, 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 engaging in sexual conduct for a fee. Not exactly something that I can discuss with my children. After deliberations and while waiting for the bailiff, I shared a comment that you, meaning me, gave years ago. Don't do anything that you would feel stupid explaining to a judge. My fellow jurors thought that was excellent advice. Well, I should get a fee from all of them. Let's see. Well, you got a whole bunch of stuff here. Brian Cox. Yeah.
He wrote us a letter?
Brian's wrote us a little email. Robin just thought you guys might get a giggle out of the thank you page of my very soon-to-be-released audiobook, Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. Thank you all for so much that you've done. Brian Cox. And so, you know, Brian is putting together an audiobook of his stories, and then they're actually going to be doing, what they say, a television show about that? Is that what they mentioned?
Yeah.
They're going to maybe put a pilot together with a television show, and he gave us, in the middle of this whole thing, the team at Voices.com, Norm Clover, blah, 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 Rich Little and George Carlin for their inspiration, Tom Jones, thank you, sir, Robin and the gang at Schnauzer Logic, Al Weens for believing, Marty Hannenberg, Taz, Clark Robertson. So we're after George Carlin, but before Marty Hannenberg. So
I'm
feeling pretty good about
nice.
That. Yeah.
Who's Marty Hannenberg?
I don't know.
Some guy.
Yeah, he's some guy.
Some young guy.
Yeah. Some young guy. Ross Schaefer.
Ross!
So Mort Sahl's 80th birthday was last week. He turned 80 years old, and Mort's... Do I hear music, or am I...
No, it's just my heartbreaking. Go ahead.
Okay. The Mort Sahl Tribute Concert is on for June the 28th at the Wadsworth Theater in Brentwood, California. Jay Leno, Bill Maher, Richard Lewis, Shelley Berman, Jack Riley will MC, and a couple of, quote, unnamed star guests will do stand-up. More coming in every day. A couple of guests have conflicts with the APO taping, so they're appealing live only. Woody Allen will do a tape tribute, and other movie people will wish Mort a happy birthday on camera. More details to follow. So that's going to be down in Los Angeles on the 28th at the Wadsworth Theater in Brentwood. I'm going down.
Cool.
I'm going to go visit and say hello to Mort. That should be fun. John DeCoven.
John!
Hey,
John DeCoven.
John
DeCoven. Exactly.
A lot of things to read you from our mailbag, Robin.
That's Howard Stern.
This is John DeCoven.
Hi, Robin.
Checking in with you for a few reasons, blah, blah, blah. Second thing is I want to let you know that I'm producing a comedy fundraiser for the Lighthouse Community Center, which is an organization that serves the LGBTQ community in Alameda. That's lesbian, gay, bi, trans, and queer, I think. Remember, it would just be just LGB, right? It was lesbian, gay, and bi. And then the trans folk kind of got themselves kind of stuck onto there. And then Q, I guess, is this kind of catch-all. I don't know what that means.
Those are hip gays.
I guess. The show is going to be on Wednesday, June the 13th at Tommy T's in Pleasanton. He's attached a flyer and a JPEG. We'll put that up on our website. It's got a great lineup of comedians. The headliner, Jen Kober, is hysterical. When I first started booking shows, I got to book her a few times. Knock, knock, knock. Now she's gone on to bigger and better things. Knock, 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 which is fun to see. I just added the knock, knock, knocks. So John has said that maybe we'd like to do a special episode of Schnauzer Logic from Tommy T's and interview the comedians.
Oh, that would be great.
Wow, I can't imagine you'd want me to be there. When it comes to an interview, I might say something weird.
I don't think there's any might. I think any possibility of that. Let's see, what else do we get here? Any other email? Let's see, what else we got here? Scientists found a cure for baldness, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and we got something from my friend Charlotte, she sent email to.
A lot of things to read you from our mailbag, Robin.
It's funnier, doesn't it? Each time. A little funnier each time. Charlotte was hearing about more of the medical shit. I'm so bored about talking about the medical shit, but I should mention it because the show may be down on and off for the next month or so as things go on. You guys know, listen to the show. The recovery from the Gamma Knife surgery, what's so fucked up is I felt perfect before the Gamma Knife surgery. I mean, I don't think I've ever felt any better. Strong, healthy, physically fit, relaxed, exercising, meditating, doing all the things that needed to do, focused, creative. The shows were all great. We were in the fucking groove. And the Gamma Knife, which was supposed to be this kind of in and out kind of thing, threw me off so badly. I mean, I'm still not walking properly. I'm going to go have an MRI of my brain on Friday, so maybe they'll see what the hell's going on there. But the most recent thing is I've started to have some kind of irregular heartbeat. Some kind of heart palpitations or skipping beats or something like that. And it's been going on for over 3 weeks. So I've now seen a cardiologist. So I think a cardiologist and having a scope put up your bum, those are the things that happen when you turn 50. And so I've now had one of
them both.
You've had them both?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did you? Well, so what happened when you... Is it scary to go to a cardiologist for you?
No. I knew that I innately knew there was nothing wrong.
Okay.
I had the same thing, irregular heartbeat.
You did?
I had to wear the 24-hour
halter. Yes, I have to wear a halter.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was funny.
Means I have to shave my arms. It's just such a... Okay, sorry, no one.
I didn't
one.
Have to shave my arms.
Yeah, my questions are bad.
Yeah. But, you know, I... Yeah. The only thing about it was that I felt like when I was walking into Safeway that people would think that I was, you know, a suicide bomber or something, because
you wear it under your clothes, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, darn it.
Wait a second.
Oh, no, I did. Yeah, but you know, there's
things. One shows on your neck and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're kind of peeking up out of your shirt a little.
All right, so I'll stay home that day.
Well, you know, or wear, you know, don't wear, you know, the power cleavage.
Okay. Right now.
Got that, Robin?
Yeah, I'm writing that down.
No
don't power. No PC. Okay, got it.
A friend of mine I used to work with at Safeway wore that 24-hour monitor.
For how long?
And he worked the whole day. For
all day long.
And so
it
how,
really doesn't.
It
but
takes
I think my point is, I don't think you should stay home. I think you should go about your business and do whatever you're doing, because
you're supposed to. They tell you to.
It's unrealistic.
Well, mostly I stay home.
Oh. All right.
This is the part of the thing when I was watching Oprah.
Well, they want you to do all your normal activities.
Is that right? Go to the gym and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. They want you to do everything that you normally do so that they can see what your heart does.
Okay.
It's just that tank when you have to bring it with you everywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and did you have an echocardiogram as well?
Yes, I did.
And, I'm worried that they're going to find that I need a multiple transplant.
No. Well, they didn't find that with me.
Okay.
They said that the irregular heartbeat was normal for me.
Really? And what causes that?
I don't know.
Because I'm kind of scared by the whole thing.
It was normal for me. I don't know what causes it, except that I do have high cholesterol.
Did they give you something for it?
No.
They just said it's okay for your heart to skip a beat?
They said the good news was that in the times when the halter showed that I was more active, that it started to even out, so it showed that my heart was strong.
Yes.
And that it just needed more activity.
Okay.
It's when I was most inactive was when it was most irregular.
Mine's the same way. So if I'm
we should just keep going, man.
Yeah, but I'm always active. I mean, it's only when I'm sort of sitting watching the TV that this stuff begins to be... I'm nervous about this. Because I talked to Sean's wife, and she said, does this mean you're going to need a pacemaker?
Oh, my God.
So she went right to the pacemaker. So, no. Of course, that's what I'm deciding. I'm going to need a pacemaker. I'm going to have a pacemaker implanted at this point.
You're going to be fine.
I'm hoping it's
I think stress. It's just your way of stressing out about your oral surgery.
Very stressed out about my oral surgery. And I'm also stressed out about having to now have my kidney checked yet again and more brain shit because my body's still not working properly. So anyhow, so as a result of all this, it's all... Thank you, Charlotte, for the advice. Charlotte gave me some advice about eating more bananas, so I will do that.
What does eating bananas do?
Potassium. Mm-hmm. It's good for your heart. Helps to electrolytes in case you have an imbalance of electrolytes. Either that or Gatorade.
You want to know what I do with bananas?
Whoa!
Lately?
Whoa, it's your birthday!
It's your birthday!
It's my birthday.
A lot of things to read you from our mailbag, Robin.
Dear Penthouse.
I never thought I'd
fall in love with a banana.
I peel them.
Oh, boring.
Cut them in half, stick them with a skewer, wrap them in saran wrap and freeze them.
Uh-huh.
And they're yummy.
My mom puts them in the microwave.
We're all silent with them.
Really?
Yeah, puts a banana, chops it up, puts a banana in the microwave, and it caramelizes, and it's incredible. I guess she likes it.
Okay. Oh, that sounds good.
All right. Wait. As soon as I talk about my mom, the show goes to tank.
Hey, I have a question, and people can answer it by calling in, you know, because I really want to know.
206-666-6540.
The devil's phone number.
What the fuck is wrong with Dr. Phil?
What happened
to him?
I caught him on TV the other night, and this guy, he's out of control. So that's my question.
He's out of control.
Out of control.
Out of control.
He had heart palpitations.
He's out of control.
What do we do a show like that?
I want to tell you. Parviz, you've never seen a doctor like this before. He's out of control.
That's pretty good.
Oh, it's terrible.
That's great.
That's a horrible
Regis. That's about as good as Andy. That's pretty good. Good.
Who
was that?
Robin? I couldn't stop watching.
Who's this? Who's this? Right.
I don't know. I have a sinus headache.
I started. I got hooked. And
but what did he do that was so bad?
Oh, he told some woman. He said, "If you don't like it, lady, there's the door." He was rude.
But what was he referring to? Maybe she wanted to, you know, like...
Maybe she's a screen door salesman.
Oh, it's just... or something.
No, I mean, she wasn't completely well-behaved. You know, she wasn't answering direct questions. But his snap at her was so unprofessional and so tabloid,
what's his real qualification for... seriously, what's his qualification? He's a fucking blowhard. He's a blowhard. All of these guys are blowhards.
I agree with you.
There's no compassion.
He's also 100... He's also like 300 pounds. He's telling us how to lose weight.
Well, he stopped doing that. At least he was smart enough to get over doing that. But these people are all blowhards. They're famous merely because they're famous.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And yet we're so in need of figures to lead us that we latch on to these hoaxsters and losers.
It's because they know the secret.
And every time they say something, you just go, duh. I mean, and we still watch. And the audience loses their mind like a bunch of monkeys. They applaud because they think, I never heard of that before. You know, treat your mom good and be nice to others.
You're insulting the monkeys in the audience. Just saying. I'm just saying. The monkeys are out of control. Oh, God.
Dead monkeys.
They're too much.
From our mailbag, Rob. Did you happen to see, by the way, a couple weeks ago, Saturday Night Live primetime special? It was a Sunday night, a couple Sunday nights ago.
Yeah.
Wasn't that hilarious?
It was.
Yeah, and That stuff was really good.
Well, here's
back
the thing.
In the 90s.
Those shows only show you the best bits that they call. I mean, if we only called the best bits from this show,
we'd have a 30-minute show.
Absolutely.
And it would be awesome.
It'd be out of control.
Sola vista.
So
no, but no, the talent.
Nice, very nice.
The talent that came out of that show is truly remarkable. I mean, a lot of people are very, very funny on that show. Right? And that was only the 90s. I mean, we're not talking about the 80s with the Anthony Michael Hall years. Those were fabulous. No, I'm kidding about that part. But but the Phil Hartman, the Chris Farleys,
Did you see Spider-Man?
3, no, I haven't seen it yet.
All right.
Have you?
No.
I hear it's not as good.
Sopranos?
No, I've never seen an episode.
You haven't?
No.
Is there an ADHD thing happening right now?
Why?
That's a prerequisite to this show. If you don't have ADD, you can't sit in.
Oh, yeah.
Look at that lever left.
Oh, we move on.
And yeah. you had your anniversary, 1-year anniversary? No.
Yeah,
no,
you did.
It wasn't your 1-year, 2-year, two-year anniversary. Yeah. A very nice time?
Yeah.
Did you get her a gift?
No.
What?
I know. It's unbelievable.
Are you talking about
it? It's because he's Iranian. Yes. He's Persian.
Oh, let me just tell you this,
Parviz. All she needs is a rug.
My husband didn't get me any gifts from
your ex-husband.
Right. Yeah. And now he's my ex-husband.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, I stepped on you. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the end of the show for this week.
Happy birthday, Sherry.
Happy birthday, Sherry. And many happy returns.
Thanks for coming out, Robin.
Don't copy me.
I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up. Pay attention. Tell the truth.
She's looking at me.
And don't be attached to the outcome. We love Opie and Anthony on this show. I love Opie and Anthony. What's going on with them on XM is criminal. If there's any way that you guys out there can support them, please do it. You guys, we're behind you here on Schnauzer Logic. And until next week, have yourself a great time. We'll see you then. Take care. Something, something. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.